The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case four from the Book of Serenity. The World Honored One Points to the Ground. Introduction. As soon as a single mote of dust arises, the whole earth is contained therein. With a single horse and a single lance, the land is extended. Who is this person who can be master in any place and meet the source in everything? The case. As the World Honored One was walking with the Sangha, he pointed to the ground with his finger and said, "This is a good spot to build a sanctuary." Indra, emperor of the gods, took a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground, and said, "The sanctuary is built." The World Honored One smiled. The verse. The boundless spring on the 100 grass tips. Picking up what comes to hand, he uses it freely. The 16-foot tall golden body, a collection of virtuous qualities, casually leads him by the hand into the red dust. Able to be master in the dusts, from outside creation, a guest shows up. Everywhere life is sufficient in its way, no matter if one is not as clever as others. So here we are, our last full day of this training period we call the coming and going sesshin. We as a community have all been giving our heart to this great matter. What a wondrous thing. What an incredible opportunity. The Buddhist teaching is that it is incredibly fortunate to be born a human being. A rare circumstance. There are so many, a myriad life forms, from bacteria to all kinds of other things, millions and billions and billions, and you have been born. You are a human. You find yourself to be here. And it is even more fortunate to encounter the Dharma. Of all of the possible circumstances in your life, at some point you heard something or read something. A friend mentioned something that sparked you, and you heard some truth that resonated in your heart. You heard something that touched you, and you responded. Many people hear these teachings, and of course many others, and we can hear and go, "Oh, that's nice. That's nice." But to head toward what we love, to take ourselves by the hand, and to move in toward this mystery, this great love. Of course, it is a love, not in the sappy sense of that, but in the true stirring of the heart. This great mystery this wondrous and weird mystery of the teaching, the Dharma. All of us have been pursuing it, have turned our life in some way, in some important way toward this. And for this morning, at least, all of us have run away to become monks in the monastery. Whether it's just for these couple hours or whether it has been for these last 3 weeks, we are all home leavers. We must leave our home. We must leave what is familiar, the world that we know, and we must head into the forest, head into the tangle of brush, head into this unknown place with very real dangers. We don't know what is coming ahead. And yet something calls us. I remember paddling my kayak off the coast of Maine, and there's a wonderful Maine Island Trail, and it's a series of islands all up the wondrous coast of Maine where you can camp out, but you can only reach them, you know, in these very small boats. And was exploring with my sister. Actually, we were out paddling, and we were heading out toward the sea, but there was one more island, and so we paddled out to that island. And as we came around the corner, we noticed there was one more island, and we went out to that, and then there was one more island. It was a lovely sense of being called out into the vast unknown, these little marking points, something out there, and moving ahead, not because this is what we should do, but moving onward because something calls to us, and our practice is our response to that call. Usually we think, well, we call out in our Om Nam, we call out, and then we're practicing receiving the response, receiving what arises as the response. But we could also say that not just donkey sees the well, but the well sees the donkey, that each one of us is called in some way. I don't mean this sort of anthropomorphic, that might work too. But something draws you here. The whiff of the fragrance of the Dharma, of truth, of beauty, this incomprehensible beauty that surrounds us. A friend of ours is a poet, and one of her poems, she talked about riding through heaven in a bubble of hell, and how often we get lost in our little bubble of problems and complaints. We might say practice is a way of allowing the bubble to burst. We find ourselves once more where we have always been. And so in this lovely koan about the Buddha walking with his Sangha, or we might say these last 3 weeks, each one of us is Buddha walking with her Sangha. Strolling through the hills, we have been scaling the high peaks, we have been plunging into the depths, this vast terrain of being human, this scenery that keeps changing. Here in good company in the Boundless Way Temple, this building that was built in the early 1900s, and these lovely grounds. And this year is our 10th coming and going sesshin, our 10th 3-week training period. Quite a thing, quite a milestone here. And we've been in the temple almost 11 years now. And as Melissa mentioned, this January is also the anniversary of our making a temple in our home, about a half a mile from here. And that temple was simply the two of us getting together with two of our friends. And we said, let's make some time every week, Sunday evening, let's get together and sit quietly. And just four of us, sometimes two or even one. But we came together to sit not with the idea of creating a physical structure. The dream was not about creating something else, but the dream was to sit together with other human beings. And in this temple, the Buddha said, here is a good place to build a temple. In some short or long time, all of us will find ourselves in a different here. Some of us will call Copenhagen or Seattle or Pittsburgh or Boston here. And here is a good place to build a temple. And in this story, Indra, the head of the gods walking with the Buddha, fairy tale koan, maybe, and takes a blade of grass and puts it in the ground and says, here is the temple. The temple is not a building. It's not just one place. But it is when human beings come together in this spirit of practice. There's a wonderful story in another koan where a teacher says that he wants to select someone to be the head of another temple. And he poses this challenge. He puts a water bottle in the center of the meditation hall, and I think he says, if you call it a water bottle, you're wrong. If you don't call it a water bottle, you're wrong. And the head monk says, well, you can't call it a straw sandal. And then the cook goes and kicks the water bottle over and leaves the meditation hall. And the teacher laughs and says, head monk loses. Ouch. Right? I mean, talk about public humiliation. And the story is that head monk then left the monastery. Surprising number of these stories include people getting upset. And some leave and some come back. But apparently this getting upset is part of what happens to us human beings. And the challenge or the invitation as we practice is, can we use what happens for the Dharma, for our awakening? This monk had to leave. He was humiliated, shamed by his teacher. He was the head monk and had given a pretty good answer. So he went and actually lived in a hermitage for a year and had quite a difficult time of resentment and difficulty. The cook, the Tenzo, Guishan, he became the one who got to be the head of the new temple, but the teacher didn't mention that there was no temple at the new temple. So Guishan went to the foot of the mountain where the teacher said the temple should be, and apparently he sat by himself for 2 or 3 years and slowly gathered a community that became a large temple in its own time. And I think of our Boundless Way groups, Jenny and Esther leading small practice groups in Pittsburgh and Copenhagen, and others in Newton, and David leading the one in Northampton. How wonderful to come together with just a few people. And our numbers here on this retreat have expanded and contracted. How wonderful to gather, and how dependable the Dharma is, large or small, is not so important. Maybe small is better. One saying I've heard about parenting is, little children, little problems, big children, big problems, little temple, little problems, big temple, big problems. And of course, this is the way it is. And we all do our best. In this koan, the introduction, the last line, who is this person who can be master in any place and meet the source in everything? So as we come toward the end of our formal training period, of course the mind runs ahead. The horse, we say, the horse sees the barn and wants to gallop. And this is not a problem, it's just natural. But so part of our discipline, part of our vow at this part of retreat is to stay this great and wondrous skill. Soon enough, you will be somewhere else. Of course, we could say in an instant you'll be somewhere else. But physically, we will disperse, all of us, willow seeds. The wind blows and the willow seeds float away on the wind. To stay here, because what we are practicing is how to be the master in any place, how to meet the source. So this being the master is not being the one who controls. The kind of mastery we're talking about here is the one who can let things be as they are. The one who can participate in life. And as Matsu said in this lovely reading, our great Chan ancestor Matsu, comprehending this, one acts in the fashion of one's time, just wearing clothes, eating food, constantly upholding the practices of a bodhisattva, passing time according to circumstances. So this is the fruit of the bodhisattva way, is not some kind of holy and removed life, but the holy life of everyday life. And our practice on the cushion is fundamentally no different than our practice in our the rest of our life. To be master of the moment is to join with the moment, to touch and be touched by the moment. This is called meeting the source. When difficulty comes, Can we stay steady? Can we bear our own reactivity long enough to stay, we might say, to stay in the monastery of the moment, right? These stories about, the head monk running off. I won't stand for it. You can't talk to me that way. He runs off. And sometimes we have to run off, and this is actually not a problem. This is life, this coming and going. But can we practice staying when everything in us wants to run away by blaming, by disappearing, by attacking? But this invitation to see the sacredness, appreciate the sacredness of the moment you are in. This is the Dharma of thusness. The Dharma of thusness, the Dharma of this moment. And in the verse, boundless spring on the 100 grass tips, picking up what comes to hand, he uses it freely. Being present with the materials of this moment. Our invitation is to enter into this life. Matsu again says, everything you encounter constitutes the meaning of your existence. Everything you encounter constitutes the meaning of your existence, and your actions are without hindrance. So here we keep the variables quite simple to allow us to see the workings, to see the mechanisms of reactivity, to see the endless arising of greed, anger, and ignorance. And I hope we can begin to see that greed, anger, and ignorance are not the problems. In fact, reactivity, greed, anger, and ignorance are the seeds of awakening. The seeds that if we can stay and hold this container of doing nothing, this curiosity of what is this? So that we don't have to lash out at ourselves or lash out at others. Or if we do lash out, we can notice the lashing out and be curious about this. Here I am. So using what comes, seeing that everything, as we say, everything that you encounter is your life. There is not some other life. This is your karma, and our karma is a wondrous and blessed thing, though we may so regret it and so feel like it is what is wrong with us. But your exact karma is your path to God, your path to awakening. Is not about changing your karma, but about penetrating into it and understanding, getting to the source. And so as we spend the rest of this day together to practice this, We say this day, and we say Sesshin will be over tomorrow, but these two are kind of meaningless words. And our life happens only right here. And no sense making a vow for, or even a plan for what you will do when you get home. If you want to live a life dedicated to the Dharma, this is a wonderful time to do it. Right here, this breath, this footstep. And all of us have worked so hard, so an encouragement to stay with yourself, to give yourself the gift of each breath, using whatever comes to hand freely, whatever arises in the mind and body, is the Dharma gate, these endless Dharma gates. There is no window of opportunity other than here. There is no plan that will get you there. But there is this moment, this life that is giving itself, that is offering itself to you in a thousand different guises. And there is the opportunity with one blade of grass to create this temple, to honor the sacredness of your life, of your body, of each action, walking, bowing, eating. Everything is an expression. Everything is our answer, our response to this call. However small or large, something calls to you, and we are doing this practice of great courage and great love of saying yes, yes, yes. As the World Honored One was walking with the congregation, he pointed to the ground with his finger and said, "This spot is good to build a sanctuary." Indra, emperor of the gods, took a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground, and said, "The sanctuary is built." The World Honored One smiled. Thank you. So please sit comfortably. Just a reminder, we're recording this, so if you'd like to say something off the record, let us know and we'll turn the recorder off briefly. Yeah, John.
You said the word barn among many other things.
Barn?
Barn.
Barn and horses.
Okay.
And so I'm just sitting here and all of a sudden this memory came back to me, which is exactly what you're talking, what you are talking about. About 5 years ago, we went to the Southwest and we got on horses in like the Chaco Canyon or something. My girls ride. I don't ride. I have ridden, but it's been decades, you know. And they told us, when we turn around, be aware that they know you're that they're heading home. And I was like, yeah, I've heard about that. And, of course, my girls were like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And we turn around and we get going and they decide to gallop because they can gallop. And the only thing I knew from watching them ride horse that I really knew, like concrete, is you have to keep your heels down when you're in a horse saddle. When you're in the stirrups, you have to keep your heels down. Well, my horse took off.
Yeah.
Like my mind takes off.
Right.
I'm not kidding. And it's such a perfect thing.
Yeah.
And if you don't stay
Right.
It's not a good situation. It's dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so rowdy. It was so rowdy. I didn't know if I was going to be able to stay on the horse.
Yeah.
And I was kind of trying to pull, and I was kind of trying to think, well, I can do this. You know, I can do this. But I didn't have the muscle build up as I did. But after all, I did.
Okay.
I had enough of the muscle.
So it's really true, this about horses.
Well, when but when I think of being here, you know, and, you know, I come and I go here. But I have been here, and I remember what it's like. When it's toward the end, or anything. It doesn't even have to be Seraphine.
Yeah.
But it's a very powerful analogy.
Yeah. It's great. Thanks.
We made it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Thanks.
Well, I said well because the sushi's not over yet.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like,
hold on.
We didn't make it.
Yeah.
I'm not home yet.
Yeah, right. Hold on. Heels down.
Hold your horses. That's what that means.
That's right.
With the everything is your life, it seems like many years there's this idea of with me and my brother of the way we were going to be when we were adults and the way the world was going to be, and so long we felt like we got off the track. I don't know, I'm just thinking, like, this is your life too, this feeling of being off the track.
Yeah.
Even though it's not here, it's something we carry.
Yeah. Well, and that, I was struck by something, Esther, you said, I think in one of your talks about this separation, you know, where that comes up where we feel separated and how challenging it is, and these feelings where we feel like, I've really gotten off the track. This couldn't be it. And to really appreciate that, yeah, this is it. This feeling off the track is, this is my life right now. This is how human beings feel, and this separation that can be so painful. I mean, I freak out when I start feeling not separate, you know? And when you're a baby, if you don't have enough connection with mom, you're going to be in trouble, right? So we needed to do that. And for many of us, that ancient pattern, if I don't keep you close to me and how I think you should be close. But can we honor even the separation as a kind of connection? All of it happening in this field of flowing apart and together. So when the monk leaves the monastery because he's so pissed off at the teacher, one way, not a problem. Everything is playing out, this coming and going. Never astray. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
I was reading a book. Doesn't matter what the book was about. There is a scene where there's a kid watching two grown-ups who are very upset at each other, a man and a woman that she knew. And she's watching through the little doorway or something. She's watching through the little keyhole. Actually, I don't know. It was outside. I'm not sure the details.
Yeah.
And she's sitting with her friend who's like a poet, and he's kind of like a, I don't know, jokester type poet. Anyway, he says, "What do you see?" And then these two adults had they'd been very upset at each other, and they had, this was the first time they were they'd seen each other in years after being pissed. And then she said that the guy was just standing there with his head down and saying nothing.
Keep your voice
louder. Keep your voice up.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And she was looking away. And then the girl told the poet that that's what she saw, and he said, "Oh, he's apologizing." And then 10 minutes passed, and the girl said, "All right, now she's yelling at him with all her might, like, rah!" And then the poet said, "Oh, that's her way of saying she's apologizing to
him."
Okay, so sweet.
Yeah. Right. There it is. Everything is it. Right? That energy. Yeah.
And there's something in that story that really touched you. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody yelled at me the day before.
Right. Yeah. Somebody yelled at you the day
right.
before. And wow, what a reframe.
Right.
They were just apologizing to you.
They were apologizing very loud.
Very loudly. Yes, very loudly and strongly.
Right.
Yeah.
They felt really bad.
Yeah.
Not at me, maybe they just felt bad.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the Dharma points I'm hearing in what you said and what Jenny said and what Joanne said, you know, we are story-making creatures. And things happen. And we create a story that satisfies us in a way, and then we cling to it. So it could be the story of separation, could be the story of horses going to the barn and I'm not going to make it, my muscles aren't strong enough. It could be the story of my parents knew what I should be and I didn't do it. They're having a fight, that's another story. But I think we have to make up stories to make, you know, to get through life. But to make them up with some wiggle room, you know, to not believe everything you think, as somebody said once, to really be interested in a more expanded version of what these things could mean. So, you know, I didn't do what my parents wanted me to do, and blah, blah, blah. To take a step back, we actually call it the backward step, and say, what is really going on here? What is this really? To be intensely curious. And if we're honest with ourselves, we tend to tell the same stories over and over. You know, they just like, and there's some point, I think, when we get sick of that, when we say, enough already. Maybe I don't know the meaning of this. Our first teacher always used to say, don't get lost in the meaning of everything. It's a dead end. It's not about finding meaning. It's about being present to each thing as it arises. So, yeah.
And I think this is what the introduction to the koan was talking about. Be the master of each situation. We might say, be the host. So whatever arises, not to have to believe it, but see, oh, this is the story that's arising. And to see into the source, that the poet was not looking at the content, but in everything to see that source.
The kid said to the poet, oh, you're full of BS.
Yeah, right, of course.
Right.
And you know, this is a very powerful story as we come to the end of a sesshin like this. The horse is heading towards the barn. And, you know, some of us, I know this is true, have left sesshin already. Right? I'm not going to practice Zen anymore. I'm just going to get through the next few hours. And, you know, I'm already thinking about packing our bags and, you know, the road ahead and what time we're leaving. I mean, those are important stories to make. But they tend to artificially stop this amazing process of opening and freeing ourselves that we're not really doing, we're cooperating with. It ends the cooperation. So just if you're doing that, then notice it. And it's like, that's an interesting story. Is that true? I don't know. But what am I feeling right now in this moment? We're still at Sesshin. And we will be even when it ends in this fantasy future that we call tomorrow. You know, we don't know if we're going to make it to tomorrow. I always think about this movie that I saw years ago called The Garden of the Finzi Continis. And I've talked about this in Dharma Talks, and it's about some wealthy Italian Jewish students who are in graduate school. And they're sitting around at the beginning of the movie worried about finishing their master's thesis and their dissertations, and they're really stressed. And, you know, within a couple of days, they're either dead or in concentration camps or they're in war. But that moment before that happens, they're so lost in their story. This is what's going to happen. We don't know. We really don't know. So this is why it's so important to keep jerking ourselves back to this.
Yeah, that's true.
So when I lived home, there was a lot of difficulty. And so I am noticing here as we move, staying, going, staying, that I think one of the things that gets in the way or that's difficult could be the trusting that everything is fine, that the conditions that are presenting themselves are fine. Or, you know, sometimes you say, oh, this is perfect, you're really upset, great!
Right.
That these things come up and are part of our training, our dharma, our everything. And so instead of going to understand why these things are happening, or is this right or not right, should I be with this person or not be with that person, should I go, should I stay, in all these different contexts of our lives, trying to drop away the finding out what is actually going on, and rather showing up, like this no hesitation teaching. But I practice hard with the no hesitation teaching, and it's not so easy. But if I remind myself, okay, so that's here, so I thought I was going to do this afternoon, but now it's this, and that flexibility brings some ease, and instead of getting in the way with wanting to figure out what's going on here and whatever.
Yeah. Well, and one of the encouragements we'll give tomorrow, but is not to make any major decisions in the next 36 hours. So that means including the great insights you have today about what you're going to say to whom and who you'll do. And okay, when I get home, I'm going to... So, you know, Melissa said some of you have already left. All of us have already left. We're all dealing with this, and it's not a problem. This is our life. This is what we're encountering, and to work skillfully with it. And for me, one of the tools or skillful means that I come back to when my mind is going with all that is, what do I really want? You know, and not what do I want out there, what do I want that, but what do I want for me? And I think that comes back to all of us are here to wake up, to see more clearly, to go more deeply into this matter of being human. So to remember that is the seeing into the source. And then that allows us to meet what arises as the true way, just this.
And I just want to say that I think I already said this, but I want to say it again. So the key practice here is not stopping making up stories. We can't do that. It just isn't the way our brains work. But to really appreciate that stories are being made up, that we... And because if we didn't have that capacity, we wouldn't be able to do anything. We wouldn't be able to, you know, do our taxes or buy train tickets or do any of that stuff, or even, you know, get enough food so tomorrow we can eat something. So it's not that making the stories is evil or wrong, but to just go, oh, look, just that little bit of space. Wow, there I go.
There I go. And I think David's right. We've all left, and we all leave all the time. And I love what you said, Esther, about you make a plan for the afternoon of Sashim. But then, especially in your job, the Shuso, something comes up, and we know that big time as teachers. You know, the unexpected. We can count on the unexpected.
There's something about not taking the stories too seriously. It's some irreverence.
Yes, it's irreverent.
It's irreverence.
It's playful.
And
it's playful.
So let's come back into our posture and encounter the unexpected one more time.